יונטב, משון הטוי והבלימוד החסידוס וברכרו ככוסי ובסי חסינו. In general, the Rebbe's own self-perception was that he was not a posik. They're all poskim, who their tafkid is to issue psokim, which are negeah for individuals or for Klal Yisrael. The Rebbe was a Rebbe. And therefore, by and large, he didn't get involved in many of the great halachic controversies that emerged in his day. Take, for example, in the early 80s, when a massive Ethiopian immigration came to Eretz Yisrael. So there was a debate amongst the Rabbonim whether the Ethiopians had a din of Yidden or whether they were not considered Yidden. A Rav here in England, who's actually giving the parallel address just now, Rabbi Shlomo Levin, consulted the Rebbe. He asked the Rebbe what was his view about the Falashas and their Jewish status. And the Rebbe wrote him, Kvar Kosov Azeh HaGoyim Reb Moshe Feinstein, Behar Pardes, Chodesh Tammuz, I think it was. He referred him to an article of Reb Moshe Feinstein, who had actually given his ruling that these immigrants were Sofok Yidden, Sofok Goyim, and therefore insofar as doing everything that is possible to save their lives, we are enjoined to do so because of Lusam Dal Damri Achot, Sofok Deraisa, Sofok Pukurach Nefoshos, but insofar as Jewish status is concerned, we must err on the side of caution, and if they want to marry into the Jewish people, they have to undergo conversion, Agir Ka'alocha. And this is an example, one of many, how the Rebbe even referred to an international shayla to an established, renowned poskim of his day. And certainly on many private occasions, the Rebbe sent shaylas to local poskim, to world-renowned poskim, on many different issues. So the question is, in which areas did the Rebbe see it fit that he should actually become involved, engaged in halachic debate, and even as the word was used, halachic battle? I would like to suggest that there are three areas where the Rebbe did step out, so to speak, beyond his remit and spoke about issues of halacha. The first was we may categorize as a meis mitzvah. Just like if there's a dead body lying on the wayside, then even a Kohen Gadol who's remitted is certainly not to get involved with tumas meis. Nevertheless, under the circumstances, for mokum sheinish, he has to do so. He's got to make sure that the corpse is treated with the dignity that it deserves and reaches its internment, kidas v'chadim. And there were many situations where the Rebbe got involved in halachic issues precisely because they were of this type. And I'm going to give examples of these. The second area was where the issue was not just halachic, but it was a halachadik inyan, but with serious hashkofadik connotations, and it was nidair for Klal Yisrael. Things where the Rebbe saw that for the wholesomeness and for the safe being of Klal Yisrael, he either got involved or he expressed a view. And the third area was the area of minhag. Generally minhag, and specifically in areas of Minhagi Chabad, where it was perceived that the Minhagi Chabad is not in keeping with the normative approach of the poskim. Here, it was the Rebbe's duty to defend Minhagi Chabad and demonstrate how our Minhagim are actually all established and exist on the firm bedrock of Halacha, Lelei Matiyo Satiyo Yomin Usmoel. So therefore, this is the introduction, the outline for this afternoon's Shia, in which I'm going to hopefully give examples of all these three categories. So back to category number one, the Rebbe's involvement in halacha b'kinyanim, which may be described as meis mitzvah, no one is taking care of them, no one is looking after them. This we see certainly already in the 50s, in the Tovshin Yids, after the Rebbe was mekabel the Messias. On certain occasions, he got involved. One of the less well-known cases, for example, we'll talk about a couple of interesting cases. Some of these cases came about because people asked the Rebbe for a bracha. people, for example, who didn't have children, wanted to engage, wanted to adopt a child, so they should be Megadol Yosim B'Seich Beisom, and the child will be considered theirs, and they will be able to have the Nachas and the Brocha that comes together with this. So they consulted the Rebbe. And the Rebbe stepped out of his unit as a Rebbe to say, by the way, I don't know why people are not calling your attention or other people's attention to the fact that if you adopt a child, it's a big mitzvah, but nevertheless, according to the contemporary practice whereby the parents conceal the child's true identity and they don't tell him that he's an adopted child, the child behaves with the parents and the parents behave with the children like normal. And of course this involves an infraction of Hilchas Yichud, because if the adopted boy is at home, certainly as an adult, with his mother, then this is an infraction of the Issa Yichud, a serious Issa, which recently been zeicher to the book of Rabbi Nissen David Dubov on the subject of Hilchas Yichud, published by Sichas in English. But this is a question of an Issa Yichud. The Rebbe made this point. And of course, Chibuk Unishuk, other matters of intimacy, which would be acceptable within family, setting, the proper family, father and son, mother and child. In the case of an adopted child, this is not the case. So here the Rebbe went out on a limb to be more about the question of Yichud. And subsequently there was a broadband in Eretz Yisrael published by a number of poskim, including the Shabina Rov, who asserted, who insisted that the Issa Yichud does obtain even in cases of adopted children, not like some of the more modern trends that were emerging, such as in the writings of the Tzitz Eliezer and other poskim, who sought to find a little bit of a leeway in halacha to be mako in these inyanim. Another question was with regard to an operation, the prostate gland, something which was virtually undiscussed until the Rebbe aroused people's attention. Again, people probably came to the Rebbe asking for a bracha for the operation, because a prostate operation is quite a common operation amongst men. It's a gland which is near the bladder, and if it's enlarged, it can cause a lot of pain and it can be dangerous, and therefore an operation is called for. Nevertheless, the way the operation was, and in many cases still is, at least until recently, still is carried out, the surgery involves cutting some of the Evri Hazera, the Chute Hazera, and this means that there's two issues. Number one, it's an infraction of sterilizing the male, causing the male to become infertile, which in itself is an issa. And secondly, there could be a shayla of leyovei putzur dako kuf shofcha b'kal Hashem, if the chutei hazera are cut in certain places in certain ways, then the person may not be allowed to get married, even though he may be perfectly capable of getting married. But if he has been rendered sterile, infertile, as a result of cutting the chutei hazera, then this could be a meaning of kuf shofcha, which would be osa. Of course, the latter period, later on, there was a lot of tshuvos. Moshe Feinstein wrote on the issue, many other rabbanim wrote on the issue as well. But the Rebbe was one of the first to alert the rabbinic world about this problem. And this occurred in a letter which was published in the 50s in Hamor, and also in the first volume of Otsa Poskim and Eben Ezra that came out. And the Rebbe's letter, the second volume, one of the early volumes, mentioned this issue, because it's an issue of Eben Ezra. So there you have another example of the Rebbe's involvement. Of course, in this entire shiur, I'm not speaking about the major battles, such as the battle of Mir Yehudi and Gir Kahalocha, or the battle against Hazor Sashtochim violating the Din of Pekorach Nefesh, which the Rebbe's stance and intransigence is well known, and his readiness even to risk losing friends of Lubavitch is also well known for these things. But these are Dvarim Yiduim and Mefursamim, and there's no need to repeat them here. I'm talking more about some less well-known issues of Halacha, where the Rebbe got involved as something which was a Dvar She'ein Somim Aleiv. Moving on to the later years, we can think of other examples of the same. Sometimes on a micro scale, sometimes on a macro scale. We now are blessed with many volumes of Igros Kodesh. A woman writes to the Rebbe about the possibility of the girls in the Lubavitch school putting on a show, as they do today, in which they bring certain lessons, messages that were internalized to play, acting out on a show. So the Rebbe writes to this woman that it's a fine idea. He says, however, you have to be careful to make sure that there's no violation of Isurim here. Isurim would seem to be trodden on Shodom Dosh Bar Kevav. And he refers to two Isurim. One which is understandable, if there are going to be male parents present at the show, then of course there's a Shaila of Kol B'Isha Erva. But something which is less well known, this of Lysia, that a girl mustn't wear man's clothing, which applies, the Rebbe says, even during the show. And this is something which we see that even in many Orthodox circles is transgressed, hopefully unwittingly. And the Rebbe says, it's my duty to point out to you, I know that this happens, but this is a law of the Isa. On a macro scale, again, in the Lamids, the Rebbe pointed out, he says, people come and ask for brachas for operations. And I noticed that very often people are having operations at the end of the week, Wednesday, Thursday, and even Friday. The Rebbe delivered a sikha on Shavuos, I think of Toshim Yom Devav, in which he explained that there's a serious problem in pre-scheduling an operation for the end of the week. Number one, there's a din shulchan aruch of mafligim b'svina shloshi yomim kodem haShabbos. You're not allowed to go set the journey on a ship 3 days before Shabbos. And the reason is mishmarim at Shabbos, because it takes time till the person becomes habituated to sea life, and the first few days you might feel sick. And this would be a deterrent to observing Oynik Shabbos properly. So therefore you're not allowed to go into a ship and set out on a journey these days unless there is a strong imperative to do so. But if it's optional, it's discretionary, and you choose to go after them, it's forbidden. Now people don't look at a hospital as a ship, but the Rebbe argues that the same principle applies. If a person is going into hospital, you shouldn't go in such a way that on Shabbos is not going to be acclimatized to the atmosphere in the hospital, and his Shabbos is going to be severely disturbed because he's still not found his place if he's going to be hospitalized for a long time. But more importantly, if he goes to the hospital and has an operation, then the likelihood of him violating things which don't justify Chol Shabbos, signing forms, post-surgery forms, or facilitating blood tests which are not required for the sake of Pekuach Nefoshes, under pressure or under ignorance, are definitely there. And therefore the Rebbe issued a strong calling for Rabbonim and individuals, whoever they may be, to be careful that unless it's an emergency operation, if it is a pre-scheduled operation where people plan in several months or several weeks in advance, then they should do so at the beginning of the week, not at the end of the week. And of course, quite characteristically, whenever the Rebbe said something, there were those who would say Ibchim Stabia, and therefore, in this particular occasion, with Moshe Feinstein and other Rabbonim, members of the Gittes Rabbonim in America, came out with a statement in Haparadis supporting the Rebbe's psak and reservedly in this particular case. And in this, the Rebbe taught us a very important lesson as well, that we must never be complacent and to think, well, if everyone does it, it must be okay. When we see something, could be a new situation, could be a situation that couldn't have possibly happened in the 20th century.
Youth rally is due to commence in the next few moments. Could parents please ensure that their children are are seated in the conference hall. Thank you.
So I think that one of the yonim here that we have to learn out, to take focus here, is the idea that we must be alert when we see things. Everyone does it. People say everyone does it. Everyone does it. The fact that everyone has an operation before Shabbos, so everyone who needs one has a question, has an operation without questioning the exact techniques and whether they fit in with halacha, is not an answer. A yid, and the chassid in particular, has constantly got to be alert to the halachic issues and infractions which could possibly be violated. And the fact that other people don't know about them is not. Limits that they don't understand the issues, whether they don't understand the biological issues, the scientific issues, or the halachic issues, but that's a limits chus. Lamai said we must be omer al mishmer, shmarti mishmarti, to make sure that we don't chas v'sholim become nichshal in umaveira deraisa or derabon. Now, an important subtitle to this first category.
Regarding prostate surgery, my late dad, I'm a Muslim, he pushed off having surgery because of what the Rebbe said.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden, it just became a stage where he couldn't pass through.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I don't want to go into the specific. No questions at the end. I mean, valid questions, we can be left to the end. I want to just give a subcategory of this. Some people ask the question whether the Rebbe was a Miko or a Machmir. You know, there are poskim who are generally known to be Machmir. Very strict. And even before you've read the tshuva, you know the likelihood the answer is going to be no. There are other poskim who characteristically are Miko. And there are various reasons for this. It doesn't have to be political bent. It could be like it says in Hagadonis and Lakit in Titania, where there are neshamas which are rooted in Midas Chesed, like Beis Hillel, and therefore they are made in Lahokel, and there are neshamas which are rooted in Midas Gvura, Midas Hadin, and therefore they are made in Lahachm. Was the Rebbe a Mikol or was he a Machm? I think, obviously it's a very broad sweep, this question, but I think we can say that at least most of the issues that we brought to the Rebbe's attention, where we see the Rebbe reflects, suggests a view, whether in a focused approach to a question or just by the way, the Rebbe was actually extremely conservative and neutral hachmir, with certain local exceptions which I will address. Where we see this, I'm going to take the Shilas, where the Rabbonim were cholok in, the Rabbonim of the 20th century. Let's take an example of a few Shilas, the question of the Mechitza, where Moshe Feinstein, in his Tshuvas, expressed a lenient view that the purpose of a Mechitza in Shul is merely designed to stop mingling between men and women, and did not need to be so solid as to stop men looking at women. Function of the mechitza was to stop taruvus rather than istakrus. Other poskim disagreed. The Rebbe, in more than one letter, and even in a public statement, Yibbis Tamus Tov Shinchu Dalet, clearly declared that it was his opinion that a mechitza is there to stop istakrus as well, and therefore a kosher mechitza has got to be one which doesn't allow the men to see the women during davening. Now, of course, I'm not coming here to pass the Mishailah for those of us who are rabbonim in shoes, where there is a bezdin, there is an authority, there is an established practice, and how can we deal with those situations. That's a Shailah bifnei atzmo, but certainly it's interesting to see that the Rebbe unreservedly and very clearly endorsed the Shittas HaMachmirim in this question. And with regard, for example, to another issue also debated in the 20th century, the question of Shemitah and Eretz Yisrael. So Shemitah and Eretz Yisrael, there were rabbonim some choshev rabbanim who were in it. And even Rav Zevin, who was a close person, who was with Chabad, strong Chabad leanings, and engaged in much correspondence with the Rebbe, was Seimachon, or was Meter, was inclined to support the Heter Mechira, that you can sell the land in Eretz Yisrael, and in this way, there's no Issa of Shmita. Once again, the Rebbe not only expressed his view that the Heter Mechira was not worth relying upon, and more than that, that the Rebbe in one letter suggests that it's somewhat of a sham. He supported the Karen for Machzikei Shavuos and Yastin and the Rav Mendelssohn's of Kenanius, his infrastructure to support the people who were keeping Shmita Kirchosa. So again, for the Rebbe, that wasn't kind of a shaila. Of course, for those people who wanted to keep, who were relying on the Heter Mechira, the Rebbe would do whatever he could to make sure that they should do it properly. At least that they should have the advantage of some opinion to be Seimachon. So again, another example of a major issue, the Rebbe clearly was Lahachmir. And yet, also on halacha d'kinyanim, which are often today described as differences between Haredim and modern Orthodox, the Rebbe took what may be described today as the Haredi view. Take, for example, a shaila which has only re-emerged today in a different form, but was alive and kicking in the 50s, the question of the Chiddush HaSanhedrin. The word Rabbanim wanted to make a Sanhedrin, or Shivash of Tayach Kivay Shoyim, other words, Tayach Kivat Chilot. Or even if not a real Sanhedrin with the halachic clout of the Sanhedrin Shoyim Shivim B'Echod, but to make a main Sanhedrin, a central body of authority which should have the emblem of a Sanhedrin, it should be seen as a universal, to have universal authority. And the Rebbe took a very strong stance against it. Not only for halachic reasons, but because of the fact that he saw this, as he put it, emanating from circles who we don't see are so eager to promote halacha. And therefore it's not good enough, he said, to look at the suggestion per se, but it's also necessary to look at who is making the suggestion. Because very often that can tell what is brewing beneath the motivation, the formal motivation for making the Sanhedrin. In a letter that the Rebbe wrote on Yutas Kislev, Tovshin Yud Aleph, to Rav Sholem Posner, he refers to a Sefer Mishnas Binyamin, who is the Rav, Rav Zilberberg, who is a Rav in Pittsburgh. And the Rebbe writes to Rabbi Posner and says that I've read this Sefer, and I'm very pleased to see that in a time and a place where we have so many Rabbonim who are kalim, looking for every possible way to cut through what they perceive to be the bureaucracy of halacha, we have a Rav here who is being extremely avoiding this sort of plague of Pechad HaTorah on the one hand, and at the same time extremely reasonable and logical in his psokim. Now this is of course something which the Rebbe wrote in parenthesis, but I explored this Sefer Mishnas Binyamin. It's interesting. When it comes to a shaila which many of us have today about allowing women to say Kaddish in the shul, he is adamantly opposed to allowing it, and he says that this not only will this not cause an aliyas hanashama for the person who is deceased, but on quite on the contrary, it's likely to cause a yeridas hanashama. Machine matzahs, a balanced view. One should discourage whoever one can't eat against, shouldn't eat machine matzahs, but of course one shouldn't declare them to be chometz gomel. A person who wants to shave his beard because his father insists on it, He says, whilst there are opinions that there are certain electric shavers that we may use, nevertheless, even if one would consider it only a hiddur, kibud al va'im does not take away the obligation, even a chumrah in so far as the mitzvah of a beard is concerned. So on and so forth. Clearly, the Rebbe liked his psak. And I think there are many occasions in Igus Kodesh where we see that the Rebbe says to people, I don't know what you're asking me, there are Haredi Rabbonim in your circle who either given a psak or could be consulted, and especially in Eretz Yisrael, when it came to issues of electric, the use of electric generators in Shabbos, and many other issues, the Rebbe advised Chabad men, in the case of girls' schools and halachic issues in girls' schools, Chabad women, to emulate what was the normal practice in Haredi circles, the emphasis being on Chugi HaHaredim, specifically in all of these cases. Nonetheless, there were exceptions in which we can see possibly a leniency in the Rebbe's rulings. And I think that these relate specifically to certain types of cases. Just before I go further, I would like to ask the chairman how much time I'm still allowed. Another 15 minutes. Okay, we've still got quite a lot of material here, so I hope I'll be able to do justice to it in this quarter of an hour. One is, in cases, I guess I think I would say that really these cases of leniency fall under the category, the second category that I spoke about. Those areas in halacha which have a much broader connotation. For example, rules concerning mechalel Shabbos before Hesed, people who desecrate the Shabbos. Halacha is very clear. Mechalel Shabbos before Hesed is dinei kigoy lechol dvarav. Nevertheless, the Rebbe encouraged people to be soimich on hetayim, on leniences, in this regard. Regabe the mitzvah of people to a minyan, regabe other issues where we could have an order why, in order to be able to make higher of people to Yiddishkeit. So, and the Rebbe writes to someone, even though generally we say that that there are circumstances, especially where the Isser is not clear the whole Hades, where we will say Chatei B'Shvil Shiyuzke Chavecha. One of these cases, if we have a Heter to rely on to be Mitzar of people to a Minyan, thereby enabling the Kiyum of a Minyan to take place, and this is how we have to do this. Clearly here, the Rebbe's inclination towards leniency was because of the broader picture of Aris Yisrael and the ability to make sure that Yidden should be able to have kehillos in which they can daven, in which they can be minyanim, and they're not constrained beyond that which is necessary. Obviously when it's necessary, so you can have it in your. Or sometimes on a personal level. There was a letter written to Reb Yitzchok Dubov, I think it was in Top Shingud Base, about a person who had to be in hospital for quite some time. He had a catheter, so he had urine escaping his bladder through the catheter, and the question was, could he daven, say brachos, kishma, etc., etc., any davar shebedusha in this situation, because the mayor grain were trickling out the whole time. So the Rebbe says, I'm not a rod, I'm not a pesuk, consult a pesuk, but he gives the correspondent, he says, I'd like you to mention to the rod a couple of factors. Amongst those are these. Firstly, that maybe the din of Mira Glayim only takes effect once the water has come out from the goof, not when it comes directly from the bladder. And the second point was that we find already a precedent in Gemara that in the case of Shchiv Mirah, for example, Gibur Shchiv Mirah Kichsuvim V'chimsuvim Domi. Why? Why did Chazal say the person who makes a will, a It's an oral testament. It's not written down. Nevertheless, we treat it as if it's written, as if a proper contract was made. Why? Shema Torah Da'atolah. A person in such a situation the very fact that he's not able to do what he wants to settle his affairs, could cause an anxiety which could worsen his situation. So therefore, when a person is somewhat down physically and also emotionally, we have to do whatever we can to help them maintain their emotional health. And for a person not to be able to daven for a long period of time could likewise be a very distressing and depressing situation for an observant Jew. So therefore, he says, this certainly serves as an imperative, as a reason to try and find a heter. Obviously, that doesn't mean that this is a heter in itself. If you look in the Tshuvas Minchas Yitzchok of Dain Weiss, he has there, he refers specifically to the Rebbe's letter, evidently shown to him by Rebbe Dubov, and goes by Rikas into the union of Shem Tutor of Dai Tualov, and also in finding a heter for this patient, in similar circumstances to daven and to say Kriyashma. So, where there is here an issue, which is not purely halachic, may escape the eye of the Pesach, but the Rebbe, whose union is to be buried for all the tzachim of all needing, bears these very much in mind. He will point these out, obviously with the necessary postscript, that this is only to be taken to the attention of the Pesach and used at his discretion and in accordance with halacha. Since I don't want to miss out on the last part, which was the question of halacha and minhag, I'll go straight to there now. Now, b'chlal b'nigot minhagim, the Rebbe was, everyone knows the man Chazal knew Yisrael Torah. There is no pasuk who's worth his name who doesn't quote it and doesn't refer to it. The question is, how much weight does it carry? What's considered a minhag? What's considered a minhag Yisrael? Incidentally, and this is only in parenthesis, there's a sikha of the Friedrich Rebbe where he says, in relation to today, that by chesivim we say that yantov amitas kislev. His oid b'nigeetz amig Yisrael is gezot kevor in as toyer hi, but the halachas kamer v'kamer b'nigeetz amig chesivim ados is toyer shlema. But nevertheless, we wouldn't be surprised if the meaning of saying that yantov and shcheresh kislev, amitas kislev, is not found in any of the other svarim, the shuva svarim of today, as amig Yisrael, or as a toyer shlema. The Rebbe, regarding non-Lubavitch customs, that means normative Jewish customs, was extremely vigilant that there shouldn't be a change in custom. I'm going to give two examples today of what I feel are extreme applications of this principle. One, someone, a shul after Rebbe, wanted to make a Aron HaKodesh where the Pareches would be inside the doors that open the Aron HaKodesh, so that the doors would be outside and the Pareches would be inside. Of course it's mutter. And the Rebbe himself in his letter says that there may even be precedent for this being more in keeping with halacha. He says, nonetheless, since this is a question of minhag beis haknesses, therefore he advises against any change or deviation from minhag beis haknesses, since the norm has been in most shoes, Ashkenazi shoes, across most of the world, to be careful about this, not to be careful, the parochus is outside the door, so therefore that's the way we should keep it. Now, another place that could be excused for saying, okay, the way you make a parochus, the door of the Aron HaKodesh, it's a matter of architecture, it's a matter of aesthetics, it's what pleases the eye. Just because this is the way they did it, maybe you shouldn't have stained glass windows because they didn't have stained glass windows. One could play the devil's advocate and say it is not a big deal. The Rebbe says no. Any deviation from minhag, whether it's because this was, the Rebbe considered this to have intrinsic value, or whether it was because he was scared of the slippery slope syndrome where this could lead to notion of change, you see here a very strong intransigence on behalf of the Rebbe and a strong affirmation of an extreme version of Minhag Yisrael. Another example of the same is this. Again, I don't have time to explain the halakhic reasons behind it, but under chuppah, when the Rav makes the brachos, generally speaking, historically speaking, the Rav didn't drink the wine, the chosam kala drank the wine. But there is a shita in achreinim that really the Rav makes the brachos to have a sip of the wine. Someone wrote to the Rav suggesting that it would be a good idea to innovate this custom. After all, since it's a sacred brachos and we can get the person to, the Rav can drink some of the wine, so why not? The Rebbe was adamantly against it. He says, especially with regard to Minhagi Chuppah of the Kiddushin, Chuppah of the Nisun, where the traditional modes are under threat. You know, for example, I'm saying the idea of the Chosin giving a ring to the Kala, and other, the Kala giving a ring to the Chosin, and other new Minhagi that people try and introduce. It is most important not to do anything to deviate even one iota from the established custom. Once again, the extreme is a heinous in Minhag, not in Chabad. And then, of course, there are many cases where the Rebbe was very conscious about Minhagim of other groups. Unlike those who say the Rebbe only knew of one Minhag, Minhag Chabad, the Rebbe asserted otherwise. So that, for example, when Michal Lipsker was a shliach in Morocco, in the early 50s, the Rebbe alerted him about the importance of being sensitive to the minhagim of the Sephardi women, and the minhagim of the Sephardi Haredi women, which he said could be verified by consulting those of them that were still Haredi and from the older generation. And even though these are things which we need not necessarily be concerned about, we must have sensitivity not to be poets gather hanohug b'mokrein. And the same, this idea of not being poets gather and all the mockery is something which Rebbe mentions in other cases. For example, about the question of establishing a Shia Gemara for women, where in principle the Rebbe was of the view that women could learn even Gemara, and perhaps even should learn Gemara. But in one letter Rebbe writes that the main concern is not to do something which could be perceived as being a princess gather, or someone who asked the Rebbe about davening in Havaras Sephardit, obviously not a person who is a Sephardi. The Rebbe said, if this may be seen as a statement of belonging to a particular chug, in other words, a statement that I am straight, not an Orthodox in contrast to Haredi, then I am datini me in contrast to ultra-Orthodox, or whatever the appellations the people may choose, then this is an issue. And finally, as much as can be done justice in the short time of this lecture, a lot of the Rebbe's involvement in the question of Minhag was Minhagi Chabad. I'm just going to give one example of something which the Rebbe said, which should also serve as a hurrah for us, and hopefully I'll have time also to summarize with the hurrah Mikol HaOmerim.
The formal set of lectures will be drawing to a close in the next few minutes. Thank you.
The union of Minhagi Chabad. We sometimes do ourselves a great injustice in Chabad when we are consulted about Minhagim and we answer them in a way that only invites further criticism. Let's take a simple example. We all know that Chassidim, on Shabbos morning, Yom Tov morning, or whenever necessity dictates, will eat before davening. They'll be telling something before davening. And in Hayom Yom in Yud Shvat, we have the vort of the Tzemach Tzedek, which he said, as best it's us in Tzvidin davening, it's a davening in Tzvidin us. It's better to eat in order to daven, and to daven in order to eat. Now, at face value, this is a nice vort. But to anyone who just repeats this vort and is not familiar with the details of the halacha, it could come across and could say, look, this is antinomianism. This is something that we're going against halacha. So it's a nice lot, it's a nice twist in the words. Best it's essence, leaving down, it's a balance, leaving lesson. But what's the real pshat? If you study the Rebbe's idyos carefully in this union, and there are quite a few of them, you actually see very clearly what this particular michtav what this particular piskan meant to say. It's quite clear in halacha that if a person eats mitame brius for reasons of health, or even for reasons, provided it's not just because he wants to have his breakfast before davening, he does it for to help his kavana, to help his davening. That al pi halacha, it is not an obligation to do so, but it's mutter to do so. If you study the din in Shulchan Aruch HaRachaim Siman Pei Tes with our Achronim, you'll see that clearly. What the Tzemach Tzedek meant to say was, whereas another person might say, look, maybe it's mutter, but the Yos Tov, rather than take the benefit of this heter, I'll be particularly strict. I'll get up and daven earlier, so I won't be so hungry, or I'll daven later, and I won't eat, so I will be a bit hungry. Mishkefaruch, I'll still be able to daven. So Chassidim came and said, Chassidus comes and teaches us, no, best it's a essence, sleep and daven, it's a daven, sleep and essence. This piskan was never meant to replace Erech Haim, Siman Pei Tes, Sif Gimel. This piskan was meant to explain why, where Chassidim part company with non-Chassidim. Where there is a din which accommodates for people to daven with more kavana and without the stomach's rumbling, then we have here Piskan of the Rebbein telling us that this is the better of the two ways. We could, in the same vein, look at many, many different other customs, ranging from Shin Sukkah to Minhagei Chanukah, and see where very often it's necessary to study the Sichas and the Torah, the Shepuzel, the Poskim, the Shechmach, and the Poskim very clearly and carefully, and then to study the Sichas and the Manorim properly before one gives, before one seeks to represent what the Rebbe is saying or what Chabad says on a particular subject. And there's nothing wrong to be Lama B'Shem Cholema in Yodea. That if a person is then rabbin chalol mipila, this does often cause many casualties and misunderstanding, which leads to miscommunication which leads to misunderstanding, which leads to fissures in Klal Yisrael, is no small chalolim. By way of seeing, I wanted to say firstly, to speak about the rabbin halacha, we cannot leave this podium without saying how important, how many letters the Rebbe wrote about in saying how important it is that we learn halacha, that we learn halacha l'maisa. We are aware that the Rebbe says, Iyaya Shecheli, I would institute from the lowest levels in Talmud Torah to the highest levels in the Yeshivas Kedavis, sessions which are dedicated purely to halacha l'maisa. And this need becomes ever more important as the time goes on. Secondly, the Rebbe says that if there are shmuas that we hear in his name which seem to contravene halacha, then we know that ipso facto these are false shmuas. And from the sentimentality of the above, we see also the idea that Chassidus is Yechanim Meshur Sabin. And Chassidus is Hadorish B'Torah Zulasai. The Rebbe's attitude clearly to halacha was one of chumrah. Where there was a tovas hazulas that was going to suffer, in such cases, there were sometimes circumstances in which the Rebbe was lenient. The Rebbe clearly defended Minhagei Yisrael more than anyone else, the pulling discussions in custom matters of Minhagei Yisrael. Not only Minhagei Chabad, but sensitivity to the Minhagim of other Kehillahs and the importance of not being paid its gather to norms or tzniyos or other norms which may prevail in a particular community. And finally, the union of Goyi Yaakov to realize that when it comes to Minhagi Chassidim, lo dover reiku, v'im reiku mikemhu. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the rap report.